The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the Life of a Song podcast. This is the third episode in a new monthly version of the series. I'm Peter Aspen. I write about the arts, all of the arts, for the Financial Times, but I have a special place in my heart for popular music. And I'm joined in the studio today by David Cheel. Hi, David. How
Hello,
are you?
Hello, Peter. How's it going? Very well, thank you.
Now, you commission and edit the Life of a Song series.
That's right, yeah. It's a weekly column in the FT Weekend and also online, in which every week we look at a song and talk about its history, the different versions. It's kind of the biography of a song and what kind of life it's had since it was written and first recorded. And today we're going to be talking about Wild Thing.
One of the great things about getting older, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is that we've come to the stage now where we can actually remember some of the things that there are 50th anniversaries of and kind of have first-hand memories. And this is certainly the case for me, Wild Thing. I remember it very clear watching it on television, in black-and-white television. But why did you choose it? What attracted you to it?
It's a fantastically primal kind of song. In itself, it's got an interesting history, the way it's written and the way it sort of found its way into the charts. But also it's got a key role in bringing to the attention of American audiences the greatest guitarist who ever lived, which was, of course, Jimi Hendrix.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a little bit of a sleep. It didn't make a huge impact right at the beginning, did it?
No, there was a songwriter called Chip Taylor, who also happens to be the brother of the actor John Voight and therefore the uncle of Angelina Jolie.
That's a brilliant fact.
Yes. The song's written to order. There was a group called the Wild Ones, who are New York-based, and Chip Taylor was asked to write something rock and roll for them. He was mostly a country and western songwriter, but he found himself in the studio sort of playing around with the riff and the idea, asked the engineer to turn the lights out, and sort of sat there in the dark channeling this sort of energy of the song. And 15 minutes later, he'd come up with Wild Thing.
Bang, yeah, three chords and a rather saucy lyric, which we'll come on to later, I think.
Yeah.
And thence, I mean, a couple of people tried it, didn't it? And then there was a kind of chance meeting with a great British pop band.
That's right. Well, the Wild Ones recorded it and it got nowhere, and I think they fizzled out fairly soon afterwards. But the song did find its way into the hands of the Troggs, with a ridiculously named lead singer, Reg Presley.
Yeah. a lot of Regs around there. Elton John, of course, remember.
Yeah.
And we ought to say the Troggs, short for troglodyte, I believe.
That's right,
showing the great literacy of the age. Yeah,
I think there's a kind of, there is a primal Stone Age theme running through this whole affair.
A clip from the Troggs' Wild Thing. There are not many chords in it, are there?
No. apart from that beautiful bent note at the beginning, it's one of the earliest examples of that. I think it sort of heralds the introduction of the rock riff in that sort of early to mid-60s. We had songs like Louie Louie, The King's Man. Who's I Can't Explain. And the Kinks, Really Got Me, You Really Got Me, which came about a little bit later. But but that sort of chunky two or three chord riff was
which everyone could actually fantasize about playing, and indeed could play if they could get hold of a guitar in front of a mirror and just hammer away. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm actually much more interested in the lyrics of Wild Thing because it's clearly a song about sex.
Mm.
And, I mean, if you look at the lyrics, you know, Wild Thing, I think I love you, but I want to know for sure.
Yes.
Come on and hold me tight. And then there's a pause. Yeah, I love you.
Yes.
So it's kind of, we kind of all know what's going on, but it's delivered, I think, by the Troggs in this rather slightly arch fashion, sort of a little bit camp. They didn't really go for it. It was kind of safe to watch on Top of the Pops, although if you think about the implications of what's going on, it's a rather grim seduction. But what I find interesting then is that it moves across the Atlantic via somebody who ironically came from that side of the Atlantic to Britain and then established his fame there, and that's Jimi Hendrix, and he takes it to a completely different place.
Yeah, exactly. Hendrix was sort of being mentored at the time by Chas Chandler, who was formerly the bass player with the Animals, and he'd been sort of incubated in London, and where he'd found a great deal of success. It was a scene that felt really comfortable with the idea of a black rock guitarist, which I think didn't really go down that well with American audiences at the time.
Mm.
Chandler decided that Hendrix should set fire to his guitar, which Hendrix did at the Rainbow Theatre, or I think it was the Astoria at the time, while playing Fire by Arthur Brown. And
Crazy world of Arthur.
Yes, and actually sustained burns when he tried it first time round. But then it went back across the Atlantic to Monterey, to the Monterey Pop Festival.
Yeah, Monterey. I mean, an incredibly important, influential festival, more so than Woodstock in some ways. And he gives this performance, which is just, as I said, takes all that sexual dynamism and tension of the song and it just explodes on the stage.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix there. One forgets Hendrix is a very witty player as well, and I love the little piece of Strangers in the Night we just heard. He used to do that quite often, just throw in the melody. I remember in the very famous version of Hey Joe when he did on the Lulu show, when he suddenly decided to abandon it and start playing something else.
Yeah, he went into Sunshine of Your Love, didn't
he? That's right, yeah. But just right at the beginning of Hey Joe, he throws in the riff from I Feel Fine by the Beatles. You know, if he liked a tune, his virtuosity was such that he would just kind of throw it in.
Sort of throw it off,
So, yeah, a very raw version. And when he says, but I want to know for sure, you know, you watch him sing that live and there's this great big smile over his face because he knows what he's implying. You don't get any of that with the Troggs. The Troggs, you get an ocarina solo. We haven't talked about the ocarina solo.
No, we haven't.
Just
It's an ancient sort of shepherd's flute that goes back thousands of years. I think it's a very primitive, well, it's a very simple instrument. Its range is pretty limited. I mean, in the Troggs version, I think he plays a solo that consists of four notes.
Yeah.
So, again, you get that sort of primal, sort of Stone Age, Neolithic sort of feel to it.
Yeah. From there, we get to Hendrix, who burns his guitar, takes it off and starts smashing it around.
Yeah.
There's a great story about whether he would follow Pete Townsend or not at the Monterey Pop Festival, where they tossed a coin in the end. But Pete Townsend, of course, who also had a routine which involved smashing up his guitar, and nobody wanted to go after the other one because neither of them did, because, of course, it would look imitative.
Right.
And in the end, Townsend lost the toss of a coin.
Right.
But Hendrix's was always kind of more more primeval and shamanistic and voodoo-like. I think we can safely say.
When he's set fire to the guitar, the guitar's lying flat on the stage and he's kneeling in front of it and sort of using these sort of conjuring motions with his hands, like he's trying to summon up some kind of spirit out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an extraordinary scene.
It is. There's a great anecdote that Al Cooper tells, that he was watching a screening of Monterey with Eric Clapton sitting next to him. Mm. And Clapton spots that at the beginning of Wild Thing, Hendrix is messing around with his guitar and he's slightly out of tune.
Mm.
And Clapton kind of smiles. But I don't believe this story, by the way, because it's very unlikely. But Clapton smiles and says, let's see what he's going to do now. And what he does now is launch into Wild Thing with this kind of barrage. It sounds like a kind of, D-Day attack.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds in tune to me. Maybe it is slightly out of tune. Who knows? Yeah. But and Clapton just laughed.
Yeah. He plays it behind his back as well, doesn't he? It's extraordinary virtuosity.
Yeah.
And I think the way the riff is played by Hendrix and the guys in the Experience, it's a kind of a looseness there as well, which I think sort of adds to the primal sexuality of it.
Well, there's a fantastic drum solo going on, isn't there,
yeah,
during the whole fire thing. Yeah, it's an extraordinary piece of music and film.
Mm. So, Peter, this is also a song that's sort of switched across the Atlantic a few times, written in America, recorded in the UK, and then going back to America. What does this tell us about music at the time, the sort of transatlantic trade?
It's fascinating, the to and fro of it. But I think with the Troggs and the lovely little ocarina solo, I think you get classic British pop music.
Mm.
It's as I said, it's slightly arch. It's very accessible. It's not threatening.
Mm.
It's a good tune. It's performed well.
Mm.
There's almost a slight air of camp. And you remember those stripy suits they wore? I mean, they looked extraordinary. And I think the transition of Wild Thing from being a sort of nice British pop song with a hint of danger to it to the fully fledged wild rock version by Hendrix, I think that is pop turning into rock music. I think it's really taking all the implications of all those things that started with Elvis and going to a very extreme place. If you watch the Monterey footage, there's some fantastic little snips of people's faces watching Hendrix.
Yes,
and there's one in particular, a kind of young girl.
Completely bewildered.
Just staring, absolutely. What is this? I mean, they have really never seen anything like it before.
Yeah.
I still think it has that power to shock now, actually.
Mm.
It's difficult to imagine any kind of equivalent.
Yeah, and this happened in the space of, what is it, a year?
Yeah.
Very,
very quick, yeah.
But I want to know for sure. Come here and suck it to me one more time again.
So, in the same year, 1967, that Hendrix played at Monterey, there was also a very early example of media-aware satire using Wild Thing. There's a comedian called Bill Minkin imitating Senator Bobby Kennedy, and Kennedy in this sort of skit is trying to record a version of Wild Thing, but not doing very well.
Wild Thing... You make my heart sing. You make everything groovy.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, isn't it? Because they picked the wildest song they could think of and given it to a politician who, although did use words like groovy and did have a fantastic rapport with America's Young at the time, was in fact rather stiff politician.
Mm, yeah.
He spoke beautifully, but a little coldly. In fact, it's a little bit Obama-like in that sense.
Yeah,
that he had that. He had that just kind of distance fully revealed there. I think it's very funny.
Yeah, there's footage on YouTube of a TV performance, and there's the Minkin playing Kennedy. He's got a couple of advisors who are standing to one side, and one of them saying, "That's it, Senator. Groove with it."
Yeah, groove with it. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So that was, again, part of the whole 60s story, I think. But then in the intervening years, well, it's stunned by lots of garage thrash bands and people learning to play the guitar. What other interesting manifestations are there of Wild?
National Public Radio in America reckon there are 7,500 or more licenses to record the song. I can't speak for them all, but many of them that I've heard are fairly conventional sort of, you know, garage punk rock versions.
Yeah.
But one that really, really stands out is by The Creatures, which is, you probably know, Budgie and Susie from Susie and the Banshees in 1981.
One thing I think I love you, but I want to know for sure. Come on, hold me tight. I love you.
That's a very different version. Mm. I personally don't like that version very much. I think it's kind of lost all its naughtiness and sleaze and just becomes this rather... Because she changes the words, doesn't she, in one point. She says, I think I hate you.
Yes. So.
And then hit me hard. Mm. So it turns into this sort of sadomasochistic, weird, dark thing. Which doesn't appeal to me very much.
It does have that, still sort of taps into the primal quality of it, though, doesn't it? It's basically, there are no instruments on that recording except for drums and vocals.
Drums and, idiosyncratic vocals, we could say. Yeah. I think my problem with it's to me, it's a kind of sexy song. It's about desire. I don't hear any of that there, other than its kind of weirdest form. I mean, punk and post-punk wasn't very comfortable with sex, I always thought. Mm. It was kind of rather joyless in that. There was a lot of energy, but slightly misdirected. You know, love comes in spurts and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But that's a personal view.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you make of it? Does it?
I like it because it takes it in, I think probably maybe for the reason that you're not keen on it, is because it takes it in a different direction. And that, for me, is, sometimes what cover versions are good at, which is making you think about a song again or looking at it from a different point of view or sort of turning it inside out and just sort of stripping it down.
Yeah, you're trying not to use the word deconstructed.
Yes.
But I think we've got there. It does do that really well. Mm. And it's very moody and just a bit unpleasant to listen to, I think.
So, Peter, to sum up our discussion, the versions that we've heard today, which I think I probably know what the answer's going to be, but which is your favourite?
Well, it's not only my favourite. I just think it's one of those rare instances where the person doing the song and the song are just, it's just perfect. It's definitive. Mm. There's no point in doing it post Jimi Hendrix. I mean, Jimi Hendrix, Wild Thing, that performance, he gets every ounce of that kind of weird sexual tension out of it. Yeah, I just, that's it for me. Yeah. It's an extraordinary moment in pop history, I think.
It is astonishing, and it did help to launch his career in the States as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
So I think we should also mention, while we're here, that there's going to be a book coming out of The Life of a Song, compilation of 50 of the pieces. A couple of yours are in there, Peter.
Good to know.
So that's coming out in September in the UK and in October in the US.
That's great news, the Lives of Songs.
And Peter, I think you've got something to plug.
It's all go next month, because I shall be taking part with my colleague Ludovic Hunter-Tilney at the FT Weekend Festival at Kenwood House on September the 2nd, and we'll be doing a discussion of The Life of a Song. We will each choose a song. I'm not quite sure which is going to be my song yet. No spoilers. So I think that'll be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Well, that's it for today, and we'll be back next month with another Life of a Song. So long.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.